Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is here. Right now, score up to 80% off everything home, plus fast and free shipping site-wide. Shop now through July 28th at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is a True Crime in Real Time update from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Today we're diving into the chilling revelations coming out of the Thirlwall inquiry, an inquiry that's peeling back the layers of how Lucy Letby, a neonatal nurse, was able to carry out an unimaginable string of crimes under the noses of those trusted to protect the most vulnerable lives. Letby, now serving 15 life sentences for the murder of 7 infants and the attempted murder of 7 more, operated in plain sight at the Countess of Chester Hospital. But what's more unsettling? This wasn't just a case of a rogue nurse slipping through the cracks. What we're learning through this inquiry is that there were red flags, so many of them, that if raised in time, might have saved lives. Why then did her supervisors and colleagues ignore the signs? What does it say about the power dynamics and trust that exist within healthcare institutions? Lucy Letby's story is more than a series of horrific crimes. It's a case study in missed signals, denial, and the terrifying consequences of blind trust. There's the cold demeanour, the excitement she displayed after infant deaths, and the disturbing statement on her first day, "I can't wait for my first death." Statements that in hindsight sound chillingly clear, but in the moment, they were brushed off as quirks of a quiet young nurse. Could the desire to protect reputations have outweighed the moral responsibility to act? And why did those around her, from mentors to managers, feel so paralysed, even as the death toll mounted? These are the questions we're unravelling today as we piece together how a nurse once described as the crème de la crème became the perpetrator of one of the most disturbing medical crime sprees in modern history. It began with hope. Lucy Letby, a promising young nurse with a bright smile and quiet demeanour, joined the neonatal unit at the Countess of Chester Hospital in 2012. To many, she seemed like the ideal candidate, diligent, punctual, and willing to take on extra shifts when things got busy. Her supervisors described her as reliable, even the crème de la crème of nursing talent. But beneath the surface of that polished reputation lay something far more sinister, something no one wanted to see. The inquiry now underway is exposing those hidden layers, revealing how Letby managed to weave herself into the daily operations of the hospital, becoming a trusted presence in the lives of parents, doctors, and nurses. But trust, it seems, was exactly what Letby exploited. Letby's time on the neonatal ward coincided with a troubling pattern. Babies who were otherwise healthy or expected to recover suddenly deteriorated. One infant after another collapsed or died unexpectedly. Doctors began noticing a chilling commonality. The same nurse was present every time tragedy struck. That nurse was Lucy Letby. But raising alarms isn't always as straightforward as it sounds. Doctors, including consultant Dr. Stephen Brary, wrestled with growing concerns. Dr. Brary noted that Letby's name kept appearing on incident reports, but when he voiced these suspicions to the hospital's leadership, he was met with resistance. Why? According to testimony, it was because of Letby's immediate supervisor, Arian Powell. Powell insisted that Letby was beyond reproach, a dedicated nurse doing everything she could in a high-pressure environment. She dismissed concerns as unfounded. The inquiry has revealed that Powell even went so far as to create a table, tracking the deaths and incidents in the neonatal unit. And in every tragic case, Letby's name stood out. Yet, even then, Powell chose to see coincidence, not malice. She assured her colleagues, "There is no evidence of wrongdoing." But the evidence, if not on paper, was accumulating in subtle ways. Nurses began noticing Letby's odd behaviour after infant deaths. She showed a troubling excitement, as if she found the tragedies stimulating rather than devastating. One nurse testified that Letby greeted her with, "You'll never guess what happened," the excitement in her voice more fitting for a gossip session than a recounting of a baby's death. These unsettling moments, however, were brushed aside. Some colleagues wrote off her behaviour as youthful inexperience or nervous energy. After all, Letby was new to the field, and the job was emotionally taxing, but it wasn't just her odd responses that raised concerns. Letby's bedside manner, or lack thereof, became a point of contention during her training. Her mentor, Nurse T, described her as cold and disconnected, failing to show the warmth and empathy expected of a children's nurse. Letby even failed her final placement for being too aloof with patients and their families. Despite these red flags, Letby managed to pass after a subsequent placement with a different supervisor, who reluctantly signed her off as competent. The inquiry has highlighted how Letby's ability to mask her true nature allowed her to blend seamlessly into the hospital environment. She wasn't just present at every tragedy, she was actively involved in the aftermath, comforting grieving parents, assisting in resuscitations, and documenting events. Some staff members mistook her eagerness for dedication. Others found it unsettling. As deaths continued to mount, Powell maintained her belief in Letby's innocence. She argued that there was no direct evidence linking the nurse to any wrongdoing. Yet Powell's own tracking table revealed a grim pattern. Letby was involved in more deaths than any other staff member. By the time Powell admitted that police should have been called, it was far too late. Dr. Brary, who had initially raised concerns, described his frustration with the hospital's reluctance to act. He felt paralysed, caught between professional doubts and institutional barriers. Powell's unwavering support for Letby, coupled with a lack of tangible evidence, made it difficult for him to escalate his concerns. "We didn't want to believe it," one nurse reflected. "It was too fantastical to imagine that a nurse could be responsible." But the inquiry reveals that Letby's colleagues had reasons to believe something was terribly wrong. Nurse T, haunted by her time mentoring Letby, now asks herself the same question every day. "How was I so blind?" She recalls Letby's cold demeanour, her awkward social interactions, and her unsettling excitement after tragic events. At the time, these behaviours seemed odd, but not criminal. In hindsight, they paint a far more disturbing picture. Letby's ability to blend in and appear competent bought her time. The hospital's hierarchical culture also played a role. Junior staff were hesitant to challenge a nurse who had earned the trust of their superiors. Even as more infants collapsed and died, the idea that one of their own could be responsible seemed too far-fetched to consider. It wasn't until multiple infants had died under suspicious circumstances that the hospital finally removed Letby from the ward. But even then, the response was muted. Letby filed a grievance, accusing her colleagues of orchestrating a witch hunt. Her supervisors, unwilling to acknowledge the possibility of criminal behaviour, allowed her to continue working in other capacities. Now, the inquiry is uncovering the devastating impact of these delays. Parents who trusted the hospital to care for their newborns are grappling with the knowledge that their children might have been saved if action had been taken sooner. And those within the hospital, nurses, doctors, and administrators, are left asking themselves how they missed the signs, how they allowed a killer to operate in their midst. As the inquiry progresses, chilling new details about Lucy Letby's behaviour and the hospital's failure to intervene continue to emerge. Powell's steadfast defence of Letby and the hospital's reluctance to involve the police remain central themes. The inquiry is forcing everyone, those within the hospital and beyond, to confront an unsettling truth. The deaths may not have been coincidences. They were part of a carefully hidden pattern, and the clues had been there all along. During testimony, Powell admitted she drew up tables that tracked the infants' deaths and which staff members were present. In one version, Letby's name was highlighted in red. Yet Powell and her colleagues still struggled to see Letby as anything more than a hard-working nurse who just happened to be unlucky. "It didn't make sense," Powell said during the inquiry. "We couldn't believe it could be intentional." But that disbelief was precisely what allowed Letby to continue operating undetected. Every time a doctor raised concerns, they were met with institutional inertia. Staff worried about being wrong, about accusing a nurse with no prior history of misconduct. Powell herself noted that there was always the nagging question, what if we're mistaken? It was easier to believe that bad outcomes were unfortunate accidents rather than deliberate acts. This hesitation was not without consequences. One of the inquiry's most damning revelations involves the unexplained morphine overdose let be administered to an infant 2 years before the murders began in earnest. The baby received 10 times the correct dosage, a potentially fatal mistake. But instead of treating it as a serious warning sign, Powell allowed Letby to resume handling controlled substances after a brief review. A chilling text message Letby sent to a colleague after this incident underscores just how easily she deflected accountability. "Everything is back to how it was," she wrote. "It was escalated more than it needed to be." Letby seemed confident that even the most serious incidents would be swept under the rug. A confidence that, as the inquiry suggests, grew with each death. Nurses and doctors now say that Letby's behaviour after each tragedy stood out, even if they didn't recognise it as suspicious at the time. She would often seek out grieving parents, offering them comfort and sympathy. Some described her as being overly involved, inserting herself into family dynamics in ways that felt invasive. One nurse testified that Letby seemed to revel in the aftermath of a baby's death, as if the experience provided her with a strange sense of purpose. The inquiry also uncovered Letby's disturbing tendency to hover during emergencies. She always seemed to be in the right place at the wrong time, present when an infant's condition suddenly deteriorated, involved in resuscitations, and ready to document events with precise detail. Colleagues, though unsettled, wrote it off as dedication. Even when Letby was removed from the neonatal unit, the hospital's response was curiously subdued. Letby's grievance against the hospital, accusing staff of unfair treatment, further complicated matters. Some managers feared the optics of wrongfully accusing a young female nurse, while others worried about reputational damage to the hospital. They chose, instead, to tread lightly. The inquiry has highlighted how deeply the hospital's culture of deference to authority played into these decisions. Powell's unwavering belief in Letby influenced other staff members, discouraging them from speaking out. Dr. Breary admitted that he hesitated to escalate his concerns because he felt unsupported by management. "We didn't have enough to go on," he testified. "No one wanted to believe it could be true." Letby's odd interactions extended beyond her colleagues and patients. Testimonies revealed that she sometimes expressed excitement about experiencing her first death early in her career, a statement brushed off as an awkward attempt at conversation. In hindsight, these moments suggest something far darker, a craving for control and involvement in life and death situations. Nurse T, Letby's mentor, now struggles with guilt. She describes waking up in the middle of the night, haunted by the thought, "How could I have been so blind?" The inquiry has brought back memories she'd rather forget: Letby's cold demeanour, her lack of warmth with patients, and her tendency to linger near grieving parents. "At the time," Nurse T admitted, "it just seemed like she was trying too hard to fit in." Letby's behaviour fits a disturbing pattern often seen in medical professionals who commit crimes. Psychologists call it the God complex, a belief that one has ultimate control over life and death. For Letby, the neonatal unit may have provided the perfect setting to act out this need for control. Vulnerable infants, overwhelmed parents, and trusting colleagues gave her access to an environment where her actions would be seen as care, not harm. The inquiry also touches on the systemic failures that allowed Letby to remain undetected for so long. In high-pressure medical settings, staff are conditioned to trust each other implicitly. Accusing a colleague of misconduct, especially without concrete evidence, carries significant professional and emotional risks. But as the inquiry reveals, trust without accountability can create the perfect cover for those with malicious intent. Powell's testimony reflects the dangers of that misplaced trust. Even as she tracked Letby's involvement in multiple infant deaths, she resisted the idea that one of her best nurses could be responsible. Nobody saw anything, Powell insisted. And without evidence, what could we do? The answer, as the inquiry is now making painfully clear, was to act sooner, long before seven babies lost their lives. The failure to take action haunts not just the hospital staff, but the families left wondering if their children might have survived. The Thirlwall inquiry continues, with findings expected in late 2025. It aims not only to uncover the full extent of Letby's actions, but also to address the systemic issues that allowed those actions to go unchecked for so long. The goal is to ensure that no nurse, doctor, or manager ever again overlooks the signs of danger in their midst. But the question remains, how do we guard against those who use trust as a weapon? And how do we prevent the fear of being wrong from stopping us from doing what's right? It's hard to wrap your head around, isn't it? How someone like Lucy Letby, who was trusted to care for the most vulnerable, could end up being the very person those babies needed protection from. We want to believe that the people we trust, our nurses, our doctors, would never betray that trust in such a way. Yet here we are, forced to confront a truth that shatters our assumptions about safety, care, and compassion. What's most haunting about Letby's story is the ease with which she operated. Her colleagues saw the signs, the cold demeanour, the unsettling excitement, the pattern of deaths. But they couldn't believe what they were seeing. It was easier to dismiss the odd behaviour than to confront the possibility that a nurse could be capable of such horror. The need to maintain trust, protect reputations, and avoid the uncomfortable truth allowed Letby to stay hidden in plain sight. This case forces us to ask uncomfortable questions, not just about Lucy Letby, but about the systems and people around her. What was going through her mind as she hovered over each infant, knowing what she was about to do? Was this about control? Power? Was it a twisted attempt to feel needed, to be at the centre of life and death situations? We may never fully understand. I'm not a psychologist, and I won't pretend to offer a diagnosis, but it's clear that what happened here was the result of both individual and institutional failure, a toxic mix of unchecked power and denial. Thank you for joining me today. If you want to stay up to date on this case and other stories we're following, hit that subscribe button. There's much more to uncover, and we'll be here to make sense of it every step of the way.
In a world where the darkest secrets lie just beneath the surface.
They said it was an accident, but the evidence says otherwise.
Where hidden killers roam unnoticed in the shadows.
I think you would definitely be looking at a blend of toxic, very bad narcissistic personality traits, and they will be vengeful and possibly resort to violence.
Join Tony Bruschi as he uncovers the truth behind the most chilling cases.
They said it was an accident, but the evidence clearly says otherwise.
Each episode, we dig deep into the minds of those who commit the unthinkable.
To your point on narcissism, he thinks in his own mind how witty he is.
Yeah.
But he lost that jury. I was done with him in 2 minutes.
From unsolved mysteries to infamous crimes.
Geez, you've just talked about how you've taught yourself how to do everything under the sun. I bet you did a YouTube video, how to best kill somebody with a knife.
Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi takes you where few dare to go.
How does someone with such a dark secret go unnoticed for so long?
With multiple new episodes every single day.
We're not just telling stories, we're seeking justice.
Listen now on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.